As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Beat. I'm Brendan Quinn from The Athletic, here with Nick Baumgartner, here with Austin Meek, here with Colton Pouncey. Big post-signing day episode. Everyone has shaken off their hangovers in any specific cases. I'm trying to see if anyone... No, you guys look all pretty good. Look like you got a night of sleep. Colton, I know you're probably well-rested. What time did you get up today?
like 9:30, 10. I'm okay.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's solid. Well, it's Colton's birthday yesterday. We can cut him a break.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Happy birthday, Colton. 26.
I'm an old man now. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Colton, are you going to sit here? Colton, are you going to sit here and let Brendan trash talk you if you just watched him Luddite his way through computer storage?
I know. For 30 minutes? Right. He was having some technical issues before this podcast.
There you go.
For those at home who are interested in what Nick's referring to, I just found out that I accidentally had 1,100 downloaded podcasts taking up space on my laptop that apparently left me with no free room to record this very podcast. So our wonderful editor, Mike Zimmerman, walked me through it, and now my computer's good, free, right?
Ready to roll.
Absolutely. I'm going to get into signing day stuff. I'm going to set the table this way. And then you guys take it where you want to go. Because I was driving around listening to some other Michigan-related content. No offense to you guys. But thing that struck me was it seemed like coming out of this, Michigan State's in pretty much a win-win scenario, right? Because it's Mel Tucker's first year. It's post-pandemic. It's just like everything that they're doing's uphill. So as long as it's... You know, as long as they don't take a total face plant, it can be painted in a good light. Michigan, on the other hand, like outside of just random dudes from like Clemson and Alabama flipping to Michigan, which obviously would not have happened, it's almost like there was no way to make it overly positive. And like from what I can see and what I read from you guys, like for all intents and purposes, Michigan did okay yesterday, right? Only lost two guys. It wasn't a total catastrophe like we talked about the other night. Like, they came out okay. They have a good class, but everyone's just going to poke holes in it regardless, right? It's always going to come back to what about Harbaugh? What about, you know, they've had classes like this that haven't done anything, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's lose, lose, and win, win. And, you know, obviously the answer is always probably in the middle for both.
Yeah, I think like we talked about on the podcast earlier this week, the best case scenario for Michigan would have been you get Xavier Worthy, you get Donovan Edwards on signing day, and then you hold on to everybody else. And they didn't quite get there. They had a couple guys flip on defense. Quentin Somerville, defensive end, flipped to UCLA. Brandon Jennings, linebacker, edge rusher, flip to Maryland. So those two hurt, and it kind of seemed like early in the day it was not trending really good, especially for the defense, because there were a couple other guys that were on the fence. But right. then they ended up finishing pretty well. They got a signature from Jaden Hood, the linebacker who there'd been some speculation that he might wait and sign in February, but they got a signature from him. And then Jaden McBurrow's cornerback ended up signing. He'd been committed, but he was picking between Michigan and Miami, ended up signing. So, you know, it was, I thought it was a pretty good day for Michigan. I know there were some Michigan staffers getting a little salty on Twitter about, you know, all the negativity out there and how they still managed to put together a good class. And look, we all know where the negativity comes from. It comes from going 2-4 and having a coach right. whose contract situation is still very much up in the air. But I thought it was, you know, it was a notable achievement that they were able to keep that class together and add Donovan Edwards on signing day with all the stuff that's going on.
I would add that I thought it was, I told Austin this, I thought it was a really weird day for Michigan. Like in some ways, like, I mean, like he said, it was good in that they only lost two guys. It looked like in the morning they could have lost maybe like four, you know, and Hood's a really good player. I liked him a lot, and they really, really, really needed to keep McBurrow's given their corner situation. So, you know, like you bat 500 in that scenario, I guess, but like, you know, I can't shake the fact that you didn't need to lose two. You didn't need to lose one, sign a contract, end this nonsense and have it be over with. The only reason they lost the two guys, Austin, I'm right, correct? Like they left because they didn't see a contract. That was what was reported. That was their hesitation. So you lose two guys, you could have lost more. You still get some kids that, you know, fit with other kids and seem to have some familiarity within the class. So it ends up being fine, I guess, in the long run. But, like, I just can't shake this feeling of, like, it's self-inflicted. You didn't need to lose two defenders in a situation where you can't afford to lose anybody. You need – these. You know, those are, you know, those are two guys who I believe were two top 300 players, top 250 maybe, top 300. Like, you can't just lose guys like that. Like, you know what I mean? When you have them committed, they're in your class, you need to sign them. You need to be thinking about the health of your program moving forward. And this scenario got all jumbled and – so in a lot of ways, yeah, they did a great job of holding together. I think the kids probably deserve as much credit as the staff because, you know, it seemed like it was a really tight class and that played a role. But could have been worse. But, you know, weird day overall, I'd say.
I didn't realize those guys flipped because of basically the Harbaugh situation. I mean, I remember talking on this podcast maybe before the season just talking about Harbaugh's contract and – you know, what it can do for recruiting. You know, a lot of coaches can just say, look, who knows if he's going to be here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the way the season's played out, that's kind of furthered a little bit more. So, yeah, I mean, that's really something if it really came down to that. You got to sign those guys.
Yeah, and, like, especially because where Michigan really needs help is on defense.
Right.
And we don't know who the defensive coordinator is going to be. We don't know what the staff is going to look like. But we do know from watching that team this year, they were really shorthanded on defense. And you look at the makeup of this roster now. I mean, they had a good day on offense. You add Donovan Edwards to that running back room. You add J.J. McCarthy at quarterback. You add Xavier Worthy and Christian Dixon and Andrell Anthony at wide receiver. Like, you know, they look pretty loaded on paper offensively. But now it's like, so all of a sudden, is Michigan a team that's got to, like, score 100 points to win? It kind of looks that way. They're loaded on offense, but, I just don't see how they're going to get this defense fixed with what they have.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the spot. It's like a Big 12-ish situation. But in some ways, like, if you're not recruiting at – we've talked about this. If you're not recruiting at that up level, the top, you're, you know – you got to get by being able to score points. So in that sense, it's great. But yes, no, they need – and maybe they can find help in the portal. I know that both schools, Michigan, Michigan State, are going to look in the portal heavily. You know, defensive tackle help would be – but again, that's going to be a premium position. So everyone's going to look in the portal and want defensive tackles and corners because those are the guys that everybody needs. And, you know, it's going to be competition there too. So it's not exactly a slam dunk.
Yeah, but let's not act like it's only going to be the portal. With this rule passing about automatic eligibility, it's going to be programs just feasting off of other teams. You're actively recruiting off of other schools' rosters. Well, it won't be just waiting for guys to fall into the portal. They will go and find the guys that they want from, you know, the lower.
Yeah, it'll be free agency, I would think. This is going to get – and that's the thing that we tried to talk about several times during this process, especially with the Michigan standpoint. You know, Michigan State's – going to be active in it obviously as well, but it was a different scenario for Michigan in that you know, they were going to have portal action on both sides, people going in and out, even in good years. Because I just think, you know, if you, especially now, there's no waiver, or there's a waiver for, you know, you can do whatever you want. So I would think that it'll be pretty active.
Yeah, these play, when you're like a big time place and you just have playing time available, I mean, it's just going to be an open market. I know on the basketball side, that's like been the big fear. And like, yeah, just think of how different that is. You know, it's a 12 man roster versus a 80 man roster, whatever the hell it is, you know? So Colton, you wrote a big piece today kind of on the philosophies of Mel Tucker, and that it's all, and kind of tied it all the way back to his early days with Saban, from both, I think, an organizational standpoint and an evaluation standpoint. And what was kind of your big take from that in terms of, you know, copying a successful system versus creating one's own?
Yeah, you know, when I wrote that story, I'd kind of done a lot of interviews like throughout the offseason, just talking to some of his staffers, people that have worked with him in the past, and trying to get a sense of why this dude is obsessed with recruiting the way he is. Because obviously, a lot of coaches know that it's important. This is the most important thing you can do, is attract talent and get good players. That helps you win games. But Mel is very detailed and process-driven. I know he likes to say that a lot, with recruiting. And it kind of, you can see the whole program kind of gravitating towards that push. So when I was talking to some people, like, they're like, yeah, it goes back to, you know, his days with Saban back at Michigan State in the late 90s. You know, Saban had this method where every offer would go through him. He had to sign off on everything. So what he would do is he would make his assistants kind of go out, go from like school to school, ask like which players you have, then come back to him. And then they would have this little piece of paper where they would kind of write all the skills and attributes that a player has and kind of grade it. On the back, you would flip it over, and they would have 10 tough questions. Like, those are more intangible. So, like, you know, how's this kid in the classroom? Does he play multiple sports? You know, is he a multi-sport athlete? Things like that. So they'd have to take that paper, go back to the high school coach, ask those questions again. And then when they got back, fold it up, put it in a little VHS sleeve, and give it to Saban along with the tape. So Saban would sign off on all that. So Mel was kind of – he kind of got into the process of, like, why he's so really specific with the process. It dates back to the 90s and when you got to start, and it's just kind of evolved over that, over time, you know, with the incorporation of social media and technology and all this stuff. Like, he's really taken advantage of that. He sees recruiting as the lifeblood of his program. He's been in the NFL for 10 years, so he kind of built his recruiting staff at Michigan State around an NFL model in terms of you know, finding hidden gems, the way you would find like a seventh round pick. He's built his staff to like kind of scour the country. From JUCO, the transfer portal, he wants to use it all. So I think it was really interesting to kind of get to know his style and some of the things he's looking to do at Michigan State.
Does he hit pop flies to potential quarterbacks?
You don't
get the reference. When Harbaugh first got to Ann Arbor, or returned to Ann Arbor, I should say, I mean, obviously everyone was fascinated with every thing he did. Like, you know, Nick and I were still at M Live, and like, if he farted in the wind, it was a headline at that point. Okay. So yeah. they had a big quarterback camp, and it was at the big house. And for some reason, I think I had to cover it. Nick was doing guys.
I was at one of these because Don Brown hit grounders to somebody at one point.
Okay, well, this was like his first year. Yeah, I know.
I wasn't obsessed at that, yeah,
with everything, and so it's this big quarterback camp. For some reason, I'm there. And yeah, he's out in the middle of the field at Michigan Stadium hitting with a baseball bat and baseball. And all the quarterbacks are out, you know, 70 yards downfield with baseball gloves on. And he's hitting.
Why?
Pop flies to these guys, having them. And, you know, we interview him afterward, and he's just like,
he had a reason.
I can read their athleticism, yeah, the way that they like catch a fly ball. And I'm like, all right, man. I mean, maybe they should go back to that.
The weirdest part of that story for me is hearing that you interviewed him afterwards. That would never happen today. You'd be beeline off that field.
You'd be barred from the camp today. You wouldn't even be let in. That's that's how that would go.
But was that the same time the sleepovers and stuff was going on? Like,
yes, that was early. That was the early days.
I wish I was here for the early days.
He was like jumping in the pool at Michigan. Remember all these things? Like, it was every day.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was all like
at a swim meet or something. He like jumped in the pool like wearing his khakis, and everyone just completely lost their shit.
That was a couple years down the road when it was just this constant attention grabbing situation. But in terms of, to pull it back to the Michigan State discussion because that's not what's really happening there. No, I mean, like, I get all of what Colton's saying. I mean, talent evaluation is like everything in football across the board. You have to, at some point within your organization, have someone whose eye is the final, you know what I mean? Like, we're not taking this kid, or we are taking this kid, and it has to be your head coach. So that all makes sense and everything else. But Colton, I do wonder, like, so this is going to be, you know, and I think we're to a point now where it's just like, it is what it is. The pandemic hasn't, you know, it'll go away at some point, hopefully sooner than later, and everyone will be able to do that. But like, this class, you know, and he can have a grace period, I suppose, on some level, but this is going to have to kind of be the core here, right? Does that make sense? Like, this is going to have to be – this one and the next one are going to have to be the two most important, you know, like, culture establishing. It has to – you know, if it's going to work, you have to have hits in this and the next one. You know what I'm saying? So, like, when you look at this group and it's not finished yet – there are some in there that, you know, that seem capable. There are some that we're going to have to wait and see. Like, ultimately, when you look at this group overall, what are your like ultimate thoughts on, is it enough? Cause I feel like they still need a lot more than what they have right here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I agree. They need a lot more. And I mean, I guess you're right to an extent. Like when you look at the class 4 years from now, you want to be able to see a lot of hits, more hits than misses, obviously, because he's going to need that. And a lot of coaches are evaluated what they do in year three, year four, year five, if they make it there, you know. So getting off to a good start is really important. Obviously, with some of the restrictions in place, it was kind of tough to do. We haven't really seen the full scope of Mel hitting the recruiting trail and going into homes of these players and kind of, you know, working those relationships. But I think we'll see that in 2022 if things open up a little bit more.
Yeah.
But in terms of this class, I mean, there's some solid building blocks, in my opinion, if they can hold on to some of these guys. And that's the big caveat here. I mean, a guy like Rayshon Benny, he didn't sign yesterday. But you know, he's a nice building block. We talked about, you know, building up the trenches on offense and defense. I think that was really a point of emphasis with this class. Rayshon Benny is probably going to be a defensive tackle at the next level, playing inside. I'm sure they can move him outside if they wanted to. He's 6'5", 275, and they like those power frames on those guys inside. Derek Harmon's another dude, big, like over 300 pounds, like 6'4", really powerful and strong. Another defensive tackle. And then the offensive lineman, you know, Gino Vandermark, Jersey kid. They really hit New Jersey hard this cycle. I think he's going to be a piece for the future, probably a guard. Pretty much every lineman they have is at least 6'5". Some of the tackles they have are 6'7", and that was something that we wanted to see, you know, those tackle size players added to this class. So I think with this class, you know, when you come in late and you kind of miss out on some of the big prospects in-state, you know, you kind of have to look elsewhere. So they're recruiting nationally. They're trying to see what they can bring in. They got a JUCO kid who's like 6'7", Brandon Baldwin. So trying to fill those spots, I think in the future when they are able to build relationships with kids in Detroit, it'll be a little bit easier to see. I think you're seeing some of those pieces in 2022 already. But, yeah, I think there are some solid building blocks in this class, but obviously you do want to see more. They're going to need to add more talent, and they got to hold on to some of these dudes. You know, Audric Estime is one of their top prospects in this class. He's a 4-star running back from New Jersey, and, you know, Notre Dame's coming after him hard. He didn't sign yesterday. You know, they're making a late push at him. So it'll be interesting that Notre Dame wanted Donovan Edwards, kind of missed out on him. So now they're looking at backup plans, and SMA is at the top of their list. So if Michigan State loses him, it's going to be tough. I feel like they can use some running backs right now. But, you know, we'll see. Mel Tucker was given a bad start, you know, with everything that he did and the restrictions in place. But, I mean, he was hired here to recruit. So we'll see.
If he can hang on to Rayshon Benny too, I think that would be impressive. I have to think that Michigan Austin's probably going to try to get him out of there if they can, or others too, maybe. But also, guys, both sides signed quarterbacks yesterday that were, I think, I mean, I know McCarthy was the number one guy on their list. I think Hampton Faye was probably up there on Mel Tucker's list in terms of guys he wanted. So in some ways, both guys got you know, the quarterback they wanted. Austin, with McCarthy, I know you've written about him before, and we've watched a ton of stuff on him. I wrote about him this morning with some film. The scenario now is weird nobody at Michigan this year did anything to cement a quarterback job. JJ is a young kid, but he did play at IMG last year, which is basically a college. I mean, I watched a lot of their tape. He ran a college offense. They let him call plays at the line. He called half of their third down calls last year, which is kind of crazy for an 18-year-old. It's a lot to put on a kid. But, like, what's your kind of thought here now as they go into what's going to be another quarterback competition year? McCarthy will be here in the winter. So, you know, what are you sort of looking at as this thing all sort of shakes out?
Yeah, I tell you what, if Jim Harbaugh is not sending a fruit basket to the McCarthys for Christmas, he should be. Because, like, if Jim Harbaugh ends up signing a contract extension here, I got to think a big part of it is J.J. McCarthy. The fact that even with his job, you know, his future unsettled, Jim Harbaugh was able to go out there and land a commitment from a five-star quarterback, which he hasn't done. I mean, you know, a high school quarterback. Shea Patterson was quarterback, but hasn't signed a high school quarterback of this caliber. Was able to get a commitment from him. And
which is crazy, by the way.
Yeah, it's nuts, but that's true.
And he was rock solid the whole time. Yeah, there was no wavering, no
drama. I saw him on Twitter. He was like, yo, calm down, guys. Like, I'm solid.
He was like the guy who kept it together and brought some other guys on board. And, to do that was just huge at this time for Michigan's program. And, you know, is he going to be ready right away? Hard to say. I mean, that's a lot to put on a guy as a true freshman to come in and, you know, compete with a guy like Joe Milton, who's been in the program for going into his fourth year now.
Yeah.
Cade McNamara has been in the program a couple years and got some playing time this year. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, you're totally right, Nick, that nobody at the quarterback position for Michigan, you know, distinguished themselves as the guy moving forward this year. So at least there's an opening there for JJ McCarthy. And if he really is that advanced, if he really is ready to play right away, it's not like he's got to unseat a guy who has a claim to the job. I think, you know, at minimum, it's going to be a wide open battle with all three of those guys in the spring. You know, Colton, what about the quarterback picture at Michigan State? I think this broke maybe after we taped the big football show on Wednesday that Michigan State landed the transfer from Temple, Anthony Russo, right?
Yes.
So you've got him, you've got Hampton Fay, great name, Hampton Fay. You've got Rocky Lombardi, still got some eligibility, right? And then Peyton Thorne, who played at the end of the year. So, like, how do you sort all of that out?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have six scholarship quarterbacks next year, and that's not going to work. You know, someone's going to have to leave, and I'm sure someone will leave on their own as well. I mean, that's just kind of the nature when you have so many guys on the roster. But, Anthony Russo did commit after we taped yesterday's Big Ten pod. But, you know, he's a interesting player. I think he was more brought in for competition. You know, he's been talking all offseason, like, hey, we need to bring in guys so we can elevate our level of competition, you know. He doesn't really care about, you know, making an upperclassman angry. He's just trying to get all the guys that he can in there to raise that level. So I think when you get a guy like Anthony Russo, you know, he's a grad transfer. He's got one more year left of eligibility, I believe, maybe. So when you bring him in, the writing might be on the wall for a guy like Theo Day, who hasn't played a snap yet. And, you know, he'll be entering his, I believe, fourth year next year. Maybe Rocky if he wants to pursue other options, because Peyton Thorne looks pretty good so far. I mean, we'll see what he does this weekend. I think maybe, you know, how this quarterback competition shakes out will be dependent on how he plays next weekend and going into the offseason, what that will look like. So it'll be interesting. Russo, I'm not sure he's going to be guaranteed the job right away, just because that's not really how Mel Tucker kind of rolls. He wants to see the competition play out. But I think getting another guy here, because if you do anticipate some guys leaving, that leaves you with, let's say, Russo, Thorne, and then some of the younger guys like Hampfay. Hampfay is not going to be ready year one. So if that's a guy that they like long term, maybe you have someone to bridge the gap. Maybe that can be Russo if you don't believe in Thorne. So they got some options. I think that's what it was all about, just keep adding depth to the roster, which is something they really didn't have. You know, going into the year, we were kind of like, who's going to be the quarterback? Because they didn't have a clear option. Rocky got his chance, didn't play well, then got hurt. Thorne is still a really young dude. He's made some strides, but at the same time, he's made some freshman mistakes. So we'll see how he progresses. And then they've got a lot of unknowns after that. So I think to get a guy like Russo, who's been a starter, you know, he was recruited by Matt Rhule, has played for a few different coaches, a few different coordinators. So he knows a lot of systems. I think for him, it's about finding the right fit and, you know, taking care of the ball. I think he had like over 30 interceptions in his career, like a lot.
There's a lot.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a guy that, if everything works out, you might have a starter for a year and someone to bridge the gap to a younger guy. But if not, even if not, I still think getting a guy like that is going to help the level of competition and maybe push a younger guy to compete even further.
Was Russo going to be the presumed starter at Temple next year, I assume?
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe not, though. I don't know. Did they bring somebody else in?
I don't know. That's kind of what I asked.
So DeJuan Mathis just transferred.
Oh, yep. There you go.
Former Iowa State commit, Michigan State commit, Ohio State commit, Georgia commit.
Making the rounds.
Yeah, he's there now. I don't know if they got him because Russo left, but yeah, I mean, it seems like I think Russo would have been started if he decided to stay.
I think both of these scenarios are going to depend a lot on, like you said, who's back. Like McCarthy on the Michigan side. Like, I feel like he has a chance. I wrote that this morning. He has more of a chance than any quarterback Harbaugh has signed to date. And when I say a chance, I mean a chance to be ready-ish in year one. His feet are outstanding. His pocket awareness is outstanding for a kid his age. He understands the game. And that's all those three things right there are the biggest hurdles, I think, even for talented high school quarterbacks, because it's like, your arm is your arm. But, like, if you can't manipulate yourself in the pocket, if you can't move around – and avoid rush and keep your eyes downfield. McCarthy does all those things. He's still a little thin, and that's my probably biggest concern with him is that, he's like McNamara when we saw that. I mean, he looked pretty good with his reads and everything else, but the first time he took a hit, it was like, well, you're hurt, so that's not good. And so I think a lot of it will depend on that. Like, is McNamara going to get stronger himself and take the next step? Is Milton going to hang around and hang in there and fight through it? I don't know. But, McCarthy, I would assume, will be in the mix. And then Colton Hampton Fay, I don't anticipate he's ready in year one, but I mean, and it's so hard with him because he's only really played like, 10 games as a high school quarterback?
Something like that.
But there are stretches in those 10 games that are pretty impressive. So, like, I don't know if it would be out of the realm of possibility that by year two he might be ready to do something. He might. So
I like him a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting player. I mean, he was a 6'6", 230 kid that played receiver and then moved over. McCarthy's probably a better athlete in terms of keeping himself, in a position to throw while being able to move, and he can change directions and things like that. But he's an interesting kid. He just hasn't played as much and everything else. But it's an interesting scenario right now because, Michigan State's not going to keep six quarterbacks next year. You're going to have two or three probably, I would assume, leave.
Yeah.
Michigan could have kids leave too. I mean, I don't know. This is all going to be a wild, wild scenario. And I almost feel like in a lot of ways, college football is like resetting itself here now, and everything is just going to be different after this is over, after we see what happens with the portal and everything.
Yeah. I would put my money on the Russo kid.
Probably. I mean, maybe
Philadelphia Catholic League, man.
But he did throw, I mean, he threw it. I think he's like 41 touchdowns and like 32 picks or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a lot. He threw it a lot at Temple. Like, he just chucks it all over the place. But yeah, I don't know about the interceptions.
And his last game at Temple, he threw it like 63 times.
Yeah, group of five doesn't always translate to the Big Ten. So we'll see.
He's got size, 6'4", 6'5", something like that, right?
He's like 240.
And again, big solid product of Archbishop Wood.
But yeah, I mean, if
Philadelphia Catholic League.
Here we go.
I will say, though, like, if the intent was to bring him here for a year and then, bridge the gap to a guy like Fay, I mean – Fay was a plan A type for them. They had some other guys they were looking at, but he was firmly in that top group, and they were going to take his commitment whenever it came. And the things they like about him, your junior year, I feel like some people get this, some people might not, but your junior year is the most important year for recruiting and evaluation, things like that. It's not really the senior year because a lot of people are committed to schools before their senior year starts. So that evaluation starts then. So for him, he only played three games as a junior before he got hurt. Before that, he wasn't even playing quarterback. He was playing wide receiver at a different school. So he transferred to a new school, only played for three games, and the season was shut down. So that was the most important year of evaluation lost. So if you look at his ranking, he's in, I think he's like 1,000 or something. In the thousands, yeah. So I think some people might like say, okay, well, what's that about? But again, he was switching positions. He's very raw at the quarterback position. He hasn't played it a ton. He is a good athlete because he was able to play receiver, and he's a big dude, so he can get up and get those balls when he was playing in that position. But then he switched over. You see some of the athleticism transfer. His senior season was kind of derailed with COVID, and I think, some restrictions on and off. But he put together a good season, but by then he was already committed. So Michigan State feels like they got something there, like a good athlete with size they like and a strong arm. So I think they're going to give him time to develop. But, yeah, if sit for a year maybe, have Russo come in, see what he can do. I don't know what that means for a guy like Peyton Thorne. Maybe eventually he might have to look somewhere else if they don't think he's the guy. But, I mean, the whole point is getting a lot of guys in here so you can have options, and that's what they've done.
Well, you got another month and a half here, ultimately, right? You got another January, you got half of December, early February. Austin, is there – I know they're recruiting the portal. What are the names – I think there – are there some names still hanging for Michigan in terms of – you know, I guess we'll all see about Jim Harbaugh here. We can talk about that in a second. But, like, in terms of recruiting, are there names still hanging there that are on the fringe?
You know, we talked about Benny earlier. That would probably – I mean, if there's a guy that they could pick up who hasn't signed, like defensive tackle was kind of the glaring hole in this class. You know, they really needed to get a, you know, another defensive tackle in this class, and they didn't get one. So if they, you know, I assume that they'll continue to, you know, give the full court press on Benny, you know, and maybe we'll see like what happens with the staff. I mean, to me, that's the big question defensively is a lot of these holes probably aren't going to get filled until you know who your defensive coordinator is. And, you know, if it's not Don Brown, if you're going to go and make an outside hire, you know, that guy's going to come in and he's going to have his own connections with guys. There's probably going to, you know, he's going to have some connections with some guys who are in the portal, probably guys that we don't know about right now. Mm-hmm. But if there are staff changes, as we assume there are going to be, you know, at minimum, there's going to be staff changes on defense. And I'm guessing that whoever comes in, you know, he's going to have his own scheme. We'll see how Don Brown's personnel fits with, you know, if it's a different guy than Don Brown, then he's going to have Don Brown's personnel and he's going to have to figure out how to make it work. Probably have to, you know, have to bring in some guys from the portal or, you know, look some different places to fill some holes to, you know, to get the personnel that he needs. So, I mean, I think it's just defensively, it's going to be a, you know, it's going to be mix and match next year. They're really going to be, you know, trying to plug in guys wherever they can. Nick, I mean, obviously we got to talk a little bit about the contract situation. Yeah. We hoped that there would be some resolution before signing day. Didn't happen. They managed to avoid a lot of, you know, defections from the class, even without a contract extension for Jim Harbaugh. But, I mean, what do we think? Is this close now? Are we talking hours? Are we talking days? What's your feel?
Yeah, I think – well, before – I mean, I think also it had – I think Will Johnson, right, also the kid from Grosse Pointe, isn't the five-star corner. I don't think he signed yesterday. I think Michigan still maybe is hopeful for him. But that leads into this point because, yes, it would have to be maybe – you'd have to have an answer on your coach. And, I think it's close to having some sort of resolution. I would say but if we don't hear anything by the end of – next week, one way or the other, I'd be a little surprised. It would mean that they're just still not close to making this thing happen. And, you know, again, all I can say is that it's never been something that anybody has wanted for this to drag into January. And for it to drag into January, as we've established, would mean that what are you doing? And what are you doing would mean that Harbaugh would be looking for, you know, escape routes to the NFL. I don't think there are any. Especially right now, I don't think that there are any that are so crystal clear that are going to open in January or February that he knows about right now. That's not to say that couldn't happen if you just sat there and waited. But either way, he's not going to get his pick of jobs like he has in the past. And you got to remember, every time Jim Harbaugh has left the job, he's kind of had his pick. He's been able to sort of – I think the only place he – you know, I mean, maybe when he left San Diego for Stanford, that would be the only time where he really didn't have his pick. But when he left Stanford for San Francisco, he could have done whatever he wanted. Same thing when he left San Francisco for here. That is not the case now. So this is a little bit different of a playbook for him. And I just think he's going to come to the realization that there's just not that much there, especially right now. And the question will become, do you think that they really want to bring you back and start this over and build a, you know, and are committed to you? And if that's the case, and if, you know, he'll sign whatever, and I don't think that money will be an object or a problem. But if he feels like they're just bringing him back so they can kick the can down the road and then fire him in a year, I think he could make it more difficult for them. And then at that point, they would have to make a decision. So I think that's where we're at. I don't think it'll last forever. I think that I would hope that by the end of next week, we'll hear something for our sake, but I don't know that that's a guarantee either, though the season is over, as far as we know. Like we said, I mean, there's no reason they can't hash this out, you know, rest of the week here or into the weekend. That would make logical sense to me. It really would. And anything beyond that would have to start getting into the illogical territory, which we've already sort of dipped our toes into.
Yeah. You know, if you read the tea leaves, it sure seems like those guys on offense that signed with Michigan yesterday, it seemed like they must have had some type of assurance or some type of confidence that they had some feel for how this was going to play out. And, you know, maybe it was just as simple as Jim Harbaugh telling them, I plan to be here and I plan for Josh Gattis to be here. That's what we're planning for, which is, you know, no different than what Jim Harbaugh said publicly.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what it was. And that was enough for those guys to feel confident signing. But, you know, you look at a guy like Xavier Worthy, who was committed to Michigan and then he visits Alabama. And, you know, that's a red flag, right? Like, what's going on there? And, you know, the fear is that, well, this uncertainty with Michigan's situation, if you've got a guy who all of a sudden he's looking at Alabama, Michigan's situation is uncertain. You don't, you know, the chances of him coming back to Michigan didn't look real good, but he did. And so I just have to wonder, like, you know, what kind of conversations happened? You know, what was it that allowed those guys, especially on offense, to feel, you know, like Donovan Edwards too, you know, to feel like they knew the situation well enough to feel comfortable signing with Michigan, even though publicly there hasn't really been a lot of clarity about what's going down.
Yeah, I assume at the very least he told those guys, I plan to be back, and at the very least I plan to run the same offense. Mm-hmm. You know, whether he said I plan to have Josh with me or not, maybe he did. You know, Gattis is a good recruiter. I mean, that could definitely be something. I could see that. But, like, I would think moving forward, all these guys kind of playing the similar – and same thing with some of the guys – most of the guys Michigan State just signed. Like, Hampton Fay runs a similar – ran a similar offense in high school. All these, you know, high-level quarterbacks that play at these academies now run college offenses. So it could be that too. But, no, I agree with you, Austin. I think it's got to be the offensive side taking his word for it, and then also taking McCarthy's word for it, like you said. Mm-hmm. I think that that was probably the two biggest things, is they probably took Harbaugh's word for it, but they also seem to really have a bond with each other. And I suppose that, you know, not I suppose, I mean, you have to credit Michigan staff for that too, because they certainly played a role in that. What would happen if they change, make staff changes, and would guys suddenly be like, well, now I'm out? You know, I don't know, but you put yourself in that situation by not signing anything before signing day. So, you know, the fallout of that won't be over until it's over. And that's the scenario that they'll have to live with.
Colton, how would you feel about Jim Harbaugh, head coach, Chicago Bears?
Please, God, no.
Oh!
I'm okay there.
Do you want to keep, what's his toes? I forget his name every time. Nagy?
Yeah. No, not so much.
You don't like him either. All right. No. Well, you gotta start over somewhere.
I'm good. Give me Bieniemy. I'll take him.
I don't think you're getting him.
I have a Michigan point to bring up.
Yeah, go ahead.
This Matt Dudek tweet. You kidding me with this?
Which one?
Okay, what is that? Yeah, I heard about that, but I didn't actually.
So this is a tweet from Matt Dudek, who's what? What is he? Recruiting coordinator? Is that
recruiting director? Of recruiting? Yeah. Top recruiting guy.
Here's this tweet. All the talking heads / negativity / complainers / whatever else couldn't stop the bond of this class.
Oh, God.
The bond they have with each other, the bond they have with us, and all caps, Michigan. React however you want. Say what you're going to say. They don't care, and I'm with them. # glow blue. # not done. # special. You know,
what's the question?
At a time when the program is like probably should be proceeding with as much humility as you can, I don't know if you need such hubris from a guy in a position like Dudek is in when you've just been getting boat raced by your rival, your closest rival,
who by everyone
exists in a different stratosphere than you. Like, can you not with the chest pounding? Like, this is exactly what it is all the time with that place. And I just see this from a guy like Matt Dudek. I'm like, dude, first of all, people don't know who you are.
No, and people know who he is.
That's kind of his
you don't know who he is. People know who he is.
I've seen some of his tweets, and that seems
average Joe, whoever, does not know who he is.
Here we go. I'm going to say, try to put this in the stripe zone here, okay? The points he's making there are all valid points, right? The class is close. They like each other. They get along. They wanted to be at Michigan. Those are all facts because they signed, right? We can't dispute those. And you can celebrate those things, and you can be proud of those things and happy about those things, and they're all legitimate. But I will say, whether intentional or not, and I'm pretty sure it is, this notion that it is not their fault that they can't recruit, or not their fault that they're 2-4, or not their fault that they don't ever beat Ohio State, or it's the talking heads' fault, or the media's fault, or Twitter.
They have to overcome your negativity.
Or somebody else's fault, or whatever. It was signing day yesterday, and you're welcoming people in with an excuse right off the top. All the talking heads can say whatever they want. I mean, you can celebrate the fact of all the things that we said. The class likes each other. They're good kids. They're good players. They get along. They want to be at Michigan. That's all great stuff. And it's job well done by everyone involved. But this bullshit about how, you know, it's someone else's fault right away about why this team's struggling or whatever else. And I don't know if that's a direct, like, you know, I don't think that that's – I'm not trying to put words in anyone's mouth. I'm just saying that's how it comes off. Mm-hmm. That's how it comes off. And – I got to tell you, that's some pretty weak shit, because you're not 2-4 because Paul Feinbaum makes fun of you or whatever. Like, that's not why you're 2-4. And this wanting to dance around all these realities is part of the reason why they're in the spot that they're in. And yeah, no, I would agree with you. I mean, I understand he's probably frustrated, and that's probably him venting frustration on Twitter, and maybe we're making too much of it, but like, he's done that before too, you know, and there's this weird aura, and Austin, you know what I'm talking about, like that it's not their fault that they're struggling. It's everyone else's fault. And it's like, guys, you got to get rid of that stuff, because at some point you're going to have to be able to field a team that can handle the ability, you know, to roll with the punches, hang in a fight, not, you know, drop down and say, okay, well, we're not going to do it today, so I guess we're going to get blown out with Wisconsin here, and that's going to be how it's going to go. Like, that's not the media's fault. We were not there. Right. It wasn't our fault that they got
pulled
off the field.
Yourself the way Michigan presents itself, then you should respond with confidence. You should respond with, this is, we did the job that we're out to do. These are our guys. We're going to roll with them, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't need to be.
Are there people that cover Michigan unfairly? Yes. Are there people that take shots at Jim Harbaugh because they don't like him? Yes. Are there people that take shots at Michigan because they are, yeah, they prefer Urban Meyer in Ohio State? Yes. But it still has nothing to do with their record on the field. I'm sorry, it doesn't. It's not – they can't – if you want to say they can't recruit because of negative recruiting and that's the only reason why they can't recruit, come on. Everyone deals with negative recruiting. That's ridiculous. Go win some football games. Like, I'm so tired of that. I'm so tired of that. And I don't know that that was his intent, but, like, that's how it comes off. And, you know, if that's how people read into it.
Some self-awareness for how that's going to come off. What say you, Austin? What say you?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to know why Michigan's lost – 15 out of 16 games to Ohio State, like, that's it right there. Because, you know, Michigan signed a good class. Ohio State signed, what, 12 top 100 guys?
Five,
if Ohio
five
State
stars.
Had signed that five. Class, they would have been pissed. Ohio State would have been – they would have lost their minds to sign a recruiting class that ranked 12th. And, like, I'm not – you know, not everything Michigan does has to be compared to Ohio State. Right. I think you can look at this Michigan class on its own and say, hey, it was a good class. And given that everything that was going on, I'm not going to say it was not a good class. I thought they did a good job to bring it home and sign the guys they signed. But, you know, it's delusional to think that, you know, they're anywhere remotely close to where they need to be if they, you know, if they really want to kind of back up the hubris that you're talking about, Brendan. Like, if they really want to get to that level, they got to get even beyond where they are. And, you know, if you're satisfied with where you're at, if you're satisfied to be 2-4 and bring in a, you know, a top 15 class, like, if that's okay with you, then you're going to be what you are. You know, that's what Michigan is. It's, you know, Michigan has gotten the reputation as a team that's okay with being mediocre. And, you know, stuff like that just feeds into it. And until somebody comes in there and says, like, we're not okay with this. Like, you know, you signed a top 15 class. Great. Next year, we got to sign a top 5 class. Like, yeah, that's the, you know, that's the mentality at the school in Columbus. And that's why they had the number 2 class in the country this year. If Michigan wants to compete at that level, they can't be too, you know, they can't sit around patting themselves on the back.
That's the thing.
Signing a new class.
If I woke up from a coma yesterday and saw that tweet, I'd have been like, oh shit, like, Michigan signed like a top 5 class. Like, let me look this thing up. It's going to be like Clemson, Alabama, LSU, Michigan. Well, that wasn't that class. It's this braggy like, look at us, look at what we did. And then you look it up, and you're like, aren't you like supposed to do that in your sleep if you have the resources Michigan has?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you don't get to like go on a victory lap for doing like the bare minimum, what you're supposed to do. With the resources that that school has, they should be doing better. They're lucky that there's still, you know, top 10, top 12, whatever they landed at this year. Like, that should be the standard every year, if not higher. So like, I don't understand the point of patting yourself on the back for putting a class together that most expected you to have. They were around 10 to 12 the entire way through. That's what they did. What they did on the field maybe had an impact, but again, that's not because of anyone else outside of the program. That's because all the people in the building, that's on them. Going 2-4 this year, not getting it done, that's on no one else besides the people in that program. So to go
– your basketball program is recruiting far better than you.
There you go.
How about that?
I think it just comes off as look at what we were able to accomplish in the face of all this adversity. And it's like, it's your adversity though. It's your adversity.
Yes.
You created it. So, and like I said at the top, like, I can appreciate all of that. Like, hey, we are proud of finding a, because it could have been a disaster. I mean, they could have lost everyone, right? True. So in that sense, I can appreciate like those guys all being like, man, that was hard. And we were able to, you know, keep it together. And I can appreciate that. But this, it comes off as like, look at all we had to deal with on top of what everyone else, you know, like we had to deal with more than everybody else. And it was like, you only did because of situations that you constructed.
Yes.
And same thing as yesterday, losing two kids. They didn't have to lose two kids. Right? Like, it only happened because of the situation the program put itself in. And that is the culture stuff that has to stop at some point. It's the, look at all this stuff that we have to deal with and navigate around. Well, most all of it is of your own doing. And people don't want to hear you've been able to navigate around your own self-created adversity to survive. They want to hear that you're not creating adversity for yourself and you're efficiently running a football program. That's what they want to hear. And until you can tell them that, I would probably say keep your tweets to recruits if you're a recruiting director and coaches, and stop messing with the fans, because I think that that's how it gets perceived, whether it's intended to or not. And I know they have to know that up there. There's no way they're that tone deaf.
How many other programs in that top 15 range would say something like that after signing day? You know?
Well, I don't think anybody else had a situation like that.
Nobody did yesterday. I mean, like, yeah. But just to pat yourself on the back, that was just a lot to me. I mean, again, I get your original point. Like, if it's like, hey, all these dudes want to be here, we got them here, like, they're part of our program, that's awesome. If that's all it was, fine. I don't think that's what it was, but, you know,
yeah, I guess. I don't know that I can sit here and accuse them of making excuses for themselves, but that's how that something like that would come off. You know what I mean? So like, that's how it projects to people, and it's Twitter. So like, that's what Twitter is. People are going to read into things. And I just think you're setting yourself up for more shots that people are going to take at you when you do stuff like that.
That's the thing. It's the, you know, the self-awareness, like I said, where like, look, I follow all this from the periphery, right? Like, you guys know that it's, but I've been like for 7 years, right, living here and watching, seeing the program and all this stuff. It's like, I see it this morning. I'm having coffee at like 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm looking at that and I'm like, what is this? Like, are you serious? Like, it's not that hard to do nothing, but you always got to say something. And I just shake my head at it. So I have a question for you guys, kind of bigger picture. We talked about this Ohio State gap and I'm not even sure like what these places are supposed to be telling themselves internally when you see something that stark. I feel like Bernie Sanders should be popping into this podcast and being like, the 1%, you know, like, it's just that it's impossible to
the 1%
to be able to even act like this is the same thing.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't know. It's not even a question, more so with statement, because it's the same thing. It's Michigan State, it's Michigan, it's Wisconsin, it's Nebraska, Penn State, where you're looking at yourselves in the mirror and saying, you know, are we going to act like we're competing for the same thing every year?
You mean just the general, the college football playoff situation? Yeah. I mean,
your league. I mean,
I know. It's, I don't know what to make of it. I feel like it's one of these things that everybody asked for it, and now you got it. And it's like a little thing that nobody wanted to admit to themselves back 10 years ago, where it was like, you know what's going to happen, right? All the five or six best teams are just going to pull away from everybody, and that's how it's going to go. Like, that's just college football. I don't know. You guys have thoughts on that? I'll wait. I'll listen to what you guys have to say.
If we're talking like Big Ten specifically, like
everything,
it's tough when you look at Ohio State and what they're doing and bringing in 12 top 100 players and already like – I think they have the number one quarterback in 2022 already. So it's like
Philly kid, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like when you look at that, it's tough. You know, if you're a program like Michigan State that's trying to get off the ground, it's like, how will I ever get to a place of competing with Ohio State? And I know D'Antonio had some success against Urban Meyer back then, but I mean, the way this program is running now, it's a different animal. And it's hard. It's weird to say because Ohio State was still Ohio State back then, but at the same time, they've just elevated their recruiting to another level. Like, I think they have more top 100 kids than, like, probably most of the conference combined, you know, like, just from this signing day. That's insane. So, when you look at that, it's pretty daunting if you're a coach, especially a first-year coach like Mel Tucker over here. You know, one thing I know he's trying to do, because he's worked at, you know, the Bamas and the Georgias and the LSUs of the world, and Ohio State, actually. But, you know, that's why I tweet about size a lot. I mean, that started off as just me trying to point somebody out and kind of took on a life of its own. But he's talked about, like, look, we know the types of teams that we need to beat to get to where we want to be. And when you look at Ohio State, their third stringers are like 6'6", 270-pound defensive ends and things like that. So he's trying to get those body frames to at least compare and match up with those guys, like, in the trenches, on the outside, whatever. You're not going to have the same type of athlete, the full package that Ohio State's getting. You have to sacrifice either – speed or athleticism or something else when you're going after those body types. But he wants to physically match up, and if he can develop those players in-house and you know, get some talent around those guys, then maybe you at least give yourself a chance. You're not being physically overmatched in every game like we saw a couple weeks ago in that game. So that's what Mel Tucker's trying to do to kind of combat some of that, but still, it's easier said than done.
And one thing I find that's the only real path I see for so many of these places, and it's kind of borrowed from like Hoops a little bit, is like you need organizational structure where you're looking at 3 and 4 years down the line right now, especially if you're a guy like Mel Tucker in his first year, in terms of bringing guys in and, you know, two keywords, development and retention, that you're able to build a roster of juniors and seniors and fifth year guys that are going to be playing maybe teams that are at least a touch younger, where you got guys that just know your system and have been there and you have some depth. And because if you're trying to match patchwork talent of playing underclassmen against these places, it just, there's no chance. Like, you need men, you know, you need old men who are there and have been in the program for 4 and 5 years and are like just good enough to stay and just not good enough to leave, right?
You need the Tom Izzo formula, man. Guys had, like, how many – he does that better than anybody in the world. How many –
Well, it's like Villanova winning their two national championships. So it was a bunch of old guys and then, like, you know, 2 5-stars or 1 5-star, and that was it. And they just had these guys who were like, oh, yeah, this is his 140th college basketball game in this Final Four. And you're like, well, no shit, they're beating these other – you know, they're beating the one-and-done teams.
If I was Ward Manuel, I would probably be telling Kevin Warren – we need an 8-team playoff, because that's really, to me, that's the only way
it's
relevant again. As long as there's a 4-team playoff and Michigan has to go through Ohio State,
they're not going to be
relevant. And we've seen with this playoff, I mean, there's the pros and cons of it, but it has totally perpetuated these, you know, 4, 5, 6 teams at the top. Yep. They're in the playoff every year. And because they're in the playoff every year, they continue to get the best players. And it just, you know, the gap between the teams at the top and everybody else continues to get wider and wider. And it's not just Michigan, Ohio State. I mean, that dynamic is in the ACC with Clemson, in the SEC with Alabama. So, like, from Michigan's perspective, if you're always comparing yourself to Ohio State, you're always going to be miserable. And it's just like, it sucks. Like, every single day you're looking at this gap and you're like, there's nothing we can do to close this gap in any meaningful way. And it, you know, I mean, I get it. On signing day, you signed a good class. You want to be excited about it. Yeah, you don't want to, like, sit here and look at this massive talent gap with your biggest rival. But that, like, that's just, I mean, honestly, I don't think it's very healthy for the sport, the way it has evolved with these very small handful of teams just kind of pulling away from everybody else. But that's where it is right now. And until they make some changes, I think, to the postseason structure, I don't know that there's really any satisfying answer out there for a program like Michigan that, you know, can be pretty good and sign a pretty good class, but it's just they're not gonna be at the Ohio State level. It's just not gonna happen.
I also kind of feel like when it comes to this siphoning of parity, like you also almost need, if you go to 8, I'd also want it to go back to some kind of computer rating.
Yeah, I would argue something needs to be done about that committee too.
No one's ever going to pick Cincinnati. I don't care if there's 4 or there's 8 or whatever. It's always going to be.
I mean, I understand having the eye test and the human element, but like, I don't know, man. Then find some people that really know football, okay? Not people that just like to watch it for fun and then are going to determine who the college football playoff teams are. Like, and political reasons are going to be involved, and money is going to be involved. Like mm-hmm. you said, you're never picking Coastal Carolina or right. you know any of these teams to get it. It's just not going to happen. The UCF stuff that we saw. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people over the years have been real big, like Austin said, on the 18 playoffs. Some have said 16. And I'm not so sure that either are wrong, you know, but I think we all sort of saw that this experiment was probably going to lead to something similar to this. And if you really wanted to really go all the way to the wall and go all the way in, then you needed to really do that. And the SEC did. And Clemson did. I'm not so sure everybody else did, and that's sort of the situation that we find ourselves in. So it's not a lot of fun for a lot of people. I know that. It's a frustrating sport for a lot of fan bases right now. I'll say that. Like, Ohio State's loving it. Georgia's loving it. Well, Georgia's probably even pissed right now. But a lot of fans.
Georgia had a chance because they, you know, those teams at the top have a built-in advantage each and every year because they're ranked highly. If they take care of business, they can lose one game and still get in. You know, it's that simple for a lot of the schools. And that's, I think, what this year has really exposed more than anything is that not that we didn't know it before, but when you look at those four teams like Ohio State, all these games canceled, they're not moving. You know, they've still been in the top four like the entire year since they started playing, and that's because. You know, they have all the talent. They were ranked highly to begin the year, and they stayed there. They took care of business. Yeah. But that what that does is it doesn't allow the teams in that, you know, 5 to 8 to 10 range to even have a chance because those top four solidify if those teams keep winning. So maybe the thought process is if you can open it up, give some other teams a chance, even if the odds are against them in a game against Alabama or Clemson, you can at least make it interesting and see, you know, maybe we can get an upset here or there. And I think that's the thought process behind 8 teams and just to widen the range a little bit more.
Yeah, my guess is that – you go ahead, Austin, sorry.
I was just going to say, I think if you're Michigan, I think you've got to be – your goal has to be how can we build to the point where we can have an 11-1 season? Mm-hmm. Not like how can we catch Ohio State? How can we get to the point where we can win every other game on our schedule except that one? And then, you know, you take your shot and who knows, something crazy happens. But at least, like, if you're an 11-1 team in the Big Ten, like, you know, you're relevant. But, I mean, Nick, you probably agree with me.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a single thing from Jim Harbaugh's program to lead us to believe that, you know, that they're capable of doing that, of getting through a season and winning 11 games without having a weird game in there somewhere where they just, you know, they don't show up or they don't have things together and, you know, set aside the Ohio State game. That's a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. We have just not seen it from Jim Harbaugh's program that they can get to that level of consistency where they can beat the other teams on their schedule.
Yeah, they did it the 1 year. They didn't get to 11, but I mean the 16 team was good enough. Probably should have been in the playoff. They were good enough to beat Ohio State. They outplayed them for most of that game and it didn't work out for them. But again, to your point, they lost at Iowa that year in a weird deal where Spate got hurt. So yeah, no, we have no evidence that they can do it consistently. We have some evidence they can get close to it, but no, you're totally right. And I think that's the expectation that most at Michigan would prefer. You know, can you get yourself to a situation where you're giving yourself a chance? And I think that people, like if they're in a semi-regular position, and they have been a couple times where they've played Ohio State on the last day of the year for a chance to go to the Big Ten title game. And if they don't have any losses before that and it's all riding on that one and they lose it, it's frustrating. But at the same time, like I think a lot of people can wake up and be like, well, you know what? Like it could be a lot worse. And they're not there now though. And that's, you know, a big part of the problem.
I don't know. This has always been my problem with college football. And it's that 80% of people have no reason to really have any flicker of belief that your program can actually compete for a championship in the sport that it's playing. And that to me has just always been completely absurd. And like my view is skewed because I went to school at a little bullshit place in Philadelphia, right? We got two great players and we're 4 seconds away from going to the Final Four as a junior, mm-hmm. you know, scored 4,000 kids. It was like that team could have won a national championship. And that's
right. It would have had a chance. Amazing. It wouldn't have had no opportunity.
Right. I think is what you're, right.
It had the opportunity.
If you're an Illinois football fan.
Right. Why are you in Illinois?
What is the point?
Right.
What are you doing? In your greatest year, you still will not compete for a national championship.
You're in the
actual sport you're playing. Right. That's just crazy to me.
You're 8-4 in the Citrus Bowl and just loving every minute of it. Yeah, well,
go nuts. Have fun. Get your t-shirts. Get your novelty.
It's a flawed sport. It's a flawed sport indeed.
It is. It is. All right. Well, this was fun.
Yeah. Let's do more of these four ways.
Austin, Colton, you see, that's the method of pulling the grenade that you know will get Nick going, just lobbing it his way. Just
I learned some things from this podcast. Brendan, you know how to push the buttons, man. That's buttons. Good.
Yeah, he does.
Been many years of this.
Yeah. That's the good stuff.
Many, many more, hopefully, to come, I'm sure.
Well, we will wrap it up on that. Make sure you are subscribed to The Athletic. There's all kinds of specials. First of all, oh, by the way, from being at the post office today, if you have not sent a Christmas present, there is zero chance in hell that you will be able to get any gift that you are trying to send to anybody. So I'd recommend you go to The Athletic and get the gift package where you get yourself a subscription and you can gift one for free to somebody else. It's probably the best deal out there right now with a week to go until Christmas. So do yourself a favor and cross off some names on your list that way. And after you do that, make tonight a night this week that you go out and support your local restaurants. And when you do so, make sure you tip your bartenders and servers.